I am J.A. Lovelock, a barrister, an author, but most importantly, a crime junkie. Welcome to my podcast, Behind the Yellow Tape. Hello and welcome to the program. In this episode of Behind the Yellow Tape, I will be discussing the case of Madeleine Smith, a case that scandalized 19th century Scotland and revealed a shocking affair between an upper middle class lady and a gentleman regarded as being of lower standing, and in which this affair ends in his death by poison. Madeleine Smith was born in Glasgow in 1836. She was the eldest of five children born to the architect James Smith and his wife Elizabeth. The family occupied a fine house in fashionable India Street and later in Blythewood Square. As befitted young ladies of her day, when she was a teenager, Madeleine was scooted off to finishing school in London, where she took classes in music, needlework, and good manners. She was also made to pray a lot. Mrs. Alice Gorton, head of the school, kept a very strict eye on the girls, which consequently led them to develop the arts of intrigue and secrecy. Watch out for clues. In 1853, Madeleine graduated and returned home to India Street. And like all such finished young ladies, she spent her days waiting for a suitable offer of marriage. So, how does a well-born and respectable young lady find herself under arrest for the ultimate crime of murder? It all began in 1855 when Madeleine, then 18, was on one of her daytime outings when she bumped into a certain handsome and well-dressed gentleman on Saatchi Hall Street, Glasgow's fashionable commerce and social display street. His name, Emile L'Angelier, French. He fancied her, she fancied him. They both entertained thoughts of how they could meet on a regular basis. They clearly wished to embark on what they knew to be a forbidden romance. But how was that going to happen? How were they going to meet? Help was at hand. With a little assistance from their friends, they were able to meet by pre-arrangements, in shops or along the streets, yet still maintaining the air of decency. She was, after all, a lady. All this went very well until their secret rendezvous were discovered. Well, not so much discovered, but brought to the attention of a very displeased Mr. James Smith by a friend of Madeleine's. After which, the way forward was letter writing, of which Madeleine was quite adept, thanks to her time at Mrs. Gorton's finishing school. Yet again, it was brought to the attention of Mr. Smith that his dear, well-bred daughter, Madeleine, was exchanging letters with this foreigner of low standing, Emile L'Angelier. Who do you think this so-called friend was? It was none other than Madeleine's own sister, Bessie. A traitor? Or was she acting to protect her sister's good name? Who knows? But what we do know is that this forbidden romance took off at a pace. There was no stopping it. Such was the strong attraction between Madeleine and Emile. And as time moved on, Madeleine found a way to send and receive Emile's letters. And there were hundreds of letters that passed between them. And in these letters, she gave herself a pseudonym, calling herself Miss Richards. Such deceit. But then, was she not schooled in the arts of intrigue and secrecy during her time at Mrs. Gorton's finishing school? And Emile was very earnest. Earnest Emile. He followed her everywhere, if only just for a brief meeting. They would meet on ferry boats, in walled gardens, and on certain occasions, when the Smith family were away, Madeline allowed Emile into the family home. I have to say here that Emile's intentions towards Madeline were honourable. He wanted to marry the girl. But to do that, he would have to convince Daddy Smith, who was not a man to be trifled with, and he certainly wasn't planning on marrying off his virgin daughter to some low-standing Frenchman who worked as a clerk. But despite all of this, the romance between Madeline and Emile grew and grew and grew. And the couple were spending more and more time together. And in the summer of 1856, as they lay together in the garden of the Smith summer home, they were at last able to give their love its fullest expression. You know what that means. Nice. But that was not to last. Trouble was afoot. Mr. Smith found a suitor for Madeline. She was to be married to William Pinnock, a well-to-do merchant. Never mind the fact that he was mature in age. What was the poor girl to do now, when she had indeed given herself to Emile? Disregarding all this talk of marriage to another man, Madeline and Emile became even more engrossed with each other, their love getting stronger and stronger. But wait a minute. Change was on the horizon. The winds of change had blown in and brought with it a chill. The letters from Madeline to Emile became briefer and cooler. Why? What's happened? William Minnock, that's what's happened. Madeline was now spending more and more time with him. Could she be falling in love with this Minnock man? Emile was agonized by this development. He continued to write to Madeline, begging her to see him. But she completely dismissed him, ignored him, even in the streets. But Emile continued to visit her at her home, sitting by her basement bedroom window night after night. And as the weather turned colder, she would sometimes allow Emile into the house for a brief meeting, and she would even make and take to him a cup of hot chocolate. So the year 1856 is drawing to a close, and Madeline finds her exciting secret affair has become a burden. Her life of deception was very difficult to maintain. Something needed to be done. But what? In January of 1857, Madeline accepted William Minnock's proposal and agrees to marry him. What? Needless to say, the Smith family is beyond pleased with this match. Later in February, Madeline asked Emile to return her letters so as not to make public her shame. Emile had threatened to give the letters to her father and tell him about their relationship. But Emile refused to return the letters. No can do, he said. Madeline felt she had to take matters into her own hands, for her sake. And in so doing, she sent a young boy in her family's employ to a nearby chemist to buy a vial of cyanide. Cyanide! What on earth was she going to do with that? The sale was refused because of the boy's young age. He was too young to be buying such a thing. Well, not to be outdone, Madeline invites Emile for a little tete-a-tete, he thinks. He was quite looking forward to reconciling with his great love. And they took tea together. How lovely. However, Emile might have been of low standing in the eyes of Glaswegian high society. He may have been madly in love, but he was not a complete lunatic. And he kept his wits about him. He kept a journal of these meetings with Madeline. just as well. Because after this first reconciled meeting, Emil begins to feel unwell. He experiences excruciating stomach pain. But in no way does he connect this with his visits to see Madeline. And they had had quite a few visits. And after each visit, Emil becomes violently ill. So what's going on here then? What is going on here is Madeline can be found in a drugstore purchasing arsenic powder. Why would Madeline, a respectable young lady, be purchasing such a deadly substance? She tells the chemist that she needs it to rid her garden of vermin and pests. Could Emil be a pest, perhaps? And she also uses it for cosmetic purposes, that is, to lighten her complexion. Very common in the 1850s. Madeline signs her name to the poison book, as required by law. And so Madeline Smith continues to purchase her poison, and Emile L'Angelier gets sicker and sicker. Despite medical attention and intervention, at 9 o'clock on the 23rd of March, 1857, Emile expires. The question is, what connects Madeline Smith and the death of Emile L'Angelier? Found among his possession were various keys, several packages of love letters, and a journal. The explicit wording of these letters would have shocked Madeline's family. In these letters, she refers to herself as Emile's darling wife, ending her letters with, "Love and affection, ever yours, Mimi." It had come to those investigating Emile's untimely death that Madeline Smith has been in the habit of purchasing arsenic, especially in recent weeks. Coincidence? The autopsy on Emile showed that there was enough arsenic in his system, enough to dispatch or take out 40 men. Talk about overkill. On Tuesday, 31st of March, 1857, Madeline Smith was arrested for murder and attempted murder of Emile L'Angelier. This was sensational! A respectable young lady from a wealthy family charged with murder? The city's newspaper stirred the public into a state of excitement, and their appetites were insatiable. Because of that, the trial was shifted from Glasgow to the High Court in Edinburgh. When the trial began on Thursday, June 30th, the streets were filled with curious citizens. The courtroom was filled to capacity. Madeline found herself facing a 3-judge panel and 15 good men, as well as a list of witnesses for the Crown, who testified to Madeline's guilt. The chemist who sold Madeline the arsenic powder testified that it was extremely difficult to administer large doses of the stuff accidentally. Another witness stated that Emile had confided in her that he suspected Miss Smith was trying to poison him. However, the Crown was dealt a blow because the journal Emile kept, which detailed his visits with Madeline and how, after such visits, he fell ill, were not allowed into evidence. Primarily because the notes were written in pencil, and the court took the view that being in pencil and not permanent could have been altered. That's a thought. There was even a suggestion that Emile committed suicide. That wasn't helped when 3 chemists for the defence declared that they sold arsenic to a man who looked like Emile. If that wasn't enough, the entire public was divided about Madeline Smith. The upper classes believed she was the true victim of Emile. They called him a vile seducer, a manipulator and a social pretender, not to mention a Frenchman. But the common people know that no young lady of wealth and position would hesitate to rid herself of an inconvenient suitor, and that she will most likely get away with it. While Madeline's fate was being decided, she spent 8 days remanded in jail. But that was no hardship. She breakfasted on coffee, rolls and mutton chops, and even received letters from men who wanted to marry her. And at the courthouse where she was held, people paid as much as a guinea just to get a brief glimpse of her. On Thursday, July 9th, after resounding closing speeches for the Crown and for the defence, and after just 22 minutes, a verdict was reached. On the count of murder, Madeline Smith was not guilty. On the count of attempted murder, it was not proven. The courtroom and the streets outside erupted in wild cheers. Madeline left the court a free woman, while Emile lies cold in his grave. So, was justice served? Or is what we have here a miscarriage of justice? What do you think? Thanks for listening. Join us next time for more fascinating and interesting matters that go on behind the yellow tape. Till then, you can keep in touch by emailing info@btytpodcast.com.
So when the scammer uses the hypnotic method of building rapport, then they create dysfunctional, delusional reality.
That's how a scam begins. Convincing the mark that it makes perfect sense to hand over their money to a con artist. The Scams and Cons podcast tells you how scams are run. You'll hear how people are convinced to buy fake art, buy machines that print money, or steal your house.
I get a phone call from my wife, and she let me know that they had decided to move all our stuff out. I can no longer do anything about it except go through an eviction.
And you'll hear it from the experts, people who run the cons.
So we go to your bank, you go in and get $6,000 cash, give us each $3,000, we give you this. Uh-huh. You go home, and what you find out is cut up newspaper.
It's fun to know how the trick is done, and that's what Scams and Cons is all about. Listen at scamsandcons.com. or wherever fine podcasts are found.